you would have joined us, and we're in a series at the moment, the Sermon on the Mount. So Matthew 5 and 6, have been working our way through that. And this morning, we are essentially starting a new series, a series within a series on prayer. We're going to focus on the Lord's Prayer for the next 4 weeks. Just sort of double down a little bit on when Jesus says, this then is how you should pray. So that's where we are, just to orient you in our journey so far. But before we get into it and read the context of the passage that we're looking at, I thought I'd start with a question. When you approach someone in public, be it on the street, be it in a shopping mall, or anywhere in public, what do you think are the acceptable things that you can ask them? When you approach someone in public, what are the acceptable things? Anyone? Where's the toilet is a good one. Anyone else? What's the time? How are you? Your name? Directions. There's generally only a couple of things that you can approach someone that you don't know, complete stranger, when you approach them in public. There's only a few things generally that you can ask them. And most of the time it's directions, or what's the time, or in emergencies, where's the toilet. And generally, that's how we engage with people. Have you ever wondered what's going on in that interaction when you approach someone and you ask them? What is actually, what's the dynamic of that interaction of when you're engaging someone like that? And this is what I think it is. When you approach anyone, you make an implicit assumption about the basis on which you're approaching that person. When you approach someone, you're automatically making an implicit assumption on the basis on which you approach them. So directions and time are permissible on the basis of a shared humanity. It's a shared experience. Like, we've all been lost before, and we need directions, and we know what it's like, and on that basis, we'll help you. We know what it's like if we're somewhere and we're running late, and we don't know what the time is. There's a common humanity. There's a shared experience, and that's the basis of the exchange by which we engage with each other. But we all know implicitly that our exchange can't go beyond that. It would seem a little bit inappropriate once you've asked to go to the toilet or where the toilet is, you say, do you mind giving me your number? You know, what about lunch? There's something about the exchange that we know there is a basis on which we're engaging that we can't go beyond. So asking for things like your number or where do you live become a little bit socially inappropriate. Why? You don't have a basis on which to relate to that person. You're wanting too much exchange. You're asking for too much give or take. And if you want a deeper exchange, if you want a deeper interaction, you need a deeper basis of relationship in order to engage each other in that way. And this dynamic is happening all the time as we engage and relate to one another. We make an implicit assumption about the basis on which we approach people. So if you want to approach someone for anything, for any type of interaction, you have to have some basis on which you approach that person. And intuitively, the basis determines the level. And if you want to have a deeper interaction, you need to have a deeper basis. Excuse me, my throat is dry. And this is basically what Jesus is wanting to teach us this morning when it comes to prayer. This is the principle in the passage that Jesus wants to teach us when it comes to approaching God and how we can engage with Him, in particular around prayer. He's asking us this question. We're going to read the passage now, but this is the question He's asking us is, on what basis do you approach God? On what basis do you come to God in particular in prayer? In what way are you relating to God? On what basis do you think God will answer your prayers? On what basis do you think God will hear your cries? And that's the principle that He wants to teach us as He lays the foundation of how we should pray. On what basis are you approaching God? So let's read the passage. It's in Matthew chapter 6, and it's verse 5, and we're going to read the whole passage down to 14, just to get a feel for the whole context. And we started last week at verse 5 through to verse 8, and we'll be focusing on the Lord's Prayer in verse 9, but I thought it'd be good if we just get the context. And when you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on street corners to be seen by men. I tell you the truth, they've received their reward in full. But when you pray, go into your room, close the door, and pray to your Father who is unseen. Then your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. And when you pray, do not keep on babbling like pagans, for they think they'll be heard because of their many words. Do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you ask him. This then is how you should pray. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come. Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us today our daily bread. Forgive us our debts as we have also forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. So the context of this passage that we started with last week and we're getting to our Father in heaven this week, this section, before Jesus tells us how to pray, he says, this then is how you should pray, how we should pray the Lord's Prayer, he is at pains to show us something. He's at pains to show us in the preceding verses that there's a basis on which we can pray. There is a basis on which we should approach God. And the Lord's Prayer, he roots it and establishes it in this basis. See, before we can praise, hallowed be your name, before we can submit, your will be done, before we can confess, before we can ask for our daily bread, you have to know the basis on which you're approaching God in prayer. So what he does is, he sets it up. And he outlines for us, from verses 5 to 8, there's two ways, he says, that we can approach God. The first way is in verse 7. It's a religious approach. He says, look here, and when you pray, do not keep on babbling like pagans, for they think they'll be heard because of their many words. So what he's saying here is, there are a grouping of religious people who sound like pagans. He's not talking about pagans, he's speaking about religious people. People who would come to church, people who would clarify or classify themselves as Christians. And he says, these religious people, they pray a lot. They pray often. They pray. So he's not just referring to non-Christians, as you might think. What he's saying is, don't be and don't pray like these religious people, because they use many words. They use fancy words. They think they'll be heard because of how they pray. They think they'll be heard on their performance because of how they have prayed. They think they can impress God. They think they can influence God. They think they can manipulate God in the way that they've prayed. And Jesus simply says, don't be like them. Don't be like them. Don't be like a religious person. And you can pray up a storm. You can come to church. You can do all the Christian things. You can recite the Lord's Prayer as often as you want. And he says, it's not about the way you pray. It's not a matter of mechanics. It's a matter of the heart. It's not a matter of how much you pray. It's not a matter of how you pray. It's a matter of on what basis you pray. And Jesus simply says, don't be like them. Don't be like religious people who sound like non-Christians, who sound like pagans. And he says the basis on which you pray is completely different. And he gives us a different approach in verse 8. He says, don't be like them. And then he says, for your Father knows what you need before you ask him. The point he's trying to make here is that there's a difference. There's a difference. Your Father knows then this becomes the basis on which you can approach God. You see, religious people think they'll be heard because of how they pray, what they say, and do. But Christians believe they'll be heard because they have a Father. Religious people think they'll be heard because of their performance. Christians believe they'll be heard on the basis of the fact that they have a Father. And Jesus is saying to us, the approach that we have to God is children to a Father. Sorry, my phone is ringing. The basis on which we approach God is that we have a Father and that we are children. And that's where he starts in verse 9. When we start the Lord's Prayer, the first thing that he says is, Our Father in heaven. So when we look at the Lord's Prayer, when he says this is how you should pray, you need to understand that he frames the whole prayer. He frames the whole interaction that we have with God on the basis that we are children and he is our Father. And he says, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be your name. So we need to lay this foundation. We need to understand this. The deeper we understand and grasp the dynamic of this basis, the deeper the relationship, the deeper the experience that we would have of God when it comes to engaging with him, in particular in prayer. Our experience and our understanding of God will be radically transformed the degree to which we understand the basis of him as our Father. And that's why we start our Father in heaven. You see, before you can worship, before you can praise, before you can give thanks, before you even get to hallowed be your name, it starts in a loving father-child relationship. It's rooted in your knowledge and understanding that you have been lavished with the unfathomable riches of God's love. And when you know what you've received from your Father, then your response is, Hallowed be your name. You can't submit your kingdom come, your will be done. You won't obey God until you understand that your relationship to him is rooted in a loving, caring father to a child who's working for your good, who loves you beyond measure. And then that releases you to throw yourself upon the Father in submission and trust and faith that you will do what he does, even when he doesn't answer your prayers in the way that you want them. You can only grow in faith and trust and submission to God when it's rooted in a deeper understanding that this is a loving Father who cares for me and is working for my good. You cannot worship. You cannot say, Hallowed be your name. You cannot say, Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven, unless you know God as your Father. And the reason for and the desire to pray in any way, shape, or form, and in particular as the Lord's Prayer lays it out, is rooted in a wonderful truth that we are the children of God. And that's where we start. Let me illustrate this for you. I'm just going to keep saying the same thing, so I'm just going to do as many illustrations as I can. I have two kids. Josh and Julia, 4 and 2. And they're at that stage as... Sorry, I just want to turn my phone off. They're at that stage where they just absolutely adore me. Might not feel like it to me, but they're at that stage that they absolutely adore me. Josh thinks I'm the greatest dad in the world simply because I've got a toolbox. It's got a drill and a screwdriver. I don't know how to use it. I never use it. But he thinks I'm incredible because I've got a toolbox. And he's just in awe of me when that toolbox comes out. And he just repeatedly is like, he loves to say, Dad, I love you. This is awesome. It's like we have this dynamic of relationship where he's saying, I love you. And from time to time, I get him to do what I want him to do. But you know what I've found? You know what I've found in our interactions? As a father to a son. This is what I've discovered myself saying. And no one told me this. I think it's just intuitive in us as dads. This is what I find myself saying. When I'm on my knees at eye level, looking at Josh in the face, asking him to do something, essentially, I'm wanting him to submit. I'm wanting him to listen to me. I'm wanting him to do what I want him to do. And you know what I find myself saying? Josh, I love you. I really do love you. And I want the best for you. And this is why I'm asking you to do this. Those are the words that come out of my mouth. Trust me. I don't want to harm you. Trust me when I say don't run into the street. Trust me when I'm asked you to do X or Y. But these words and these thoughts are in my heart is, trust me, I love you. And I have to remind him, Josh, does daddy love you? Yes. Can you trust me? Yes. And in this basis, I'm asking you to do that. So the way he feels about me, the way he responds to me, the way he listens to me is based in the deeper sense that he knows I'm his father and I love him and he can trust me. Now I have two nieces, Jess and Abby, and they were at my house this week and we spent a bit of time together. Do you think they appreciate me? Do you think they love me? Do you think they listen to me? Do you think Abby and Jess trust me in the same way that Josh does? No, she doesn't. They don't. They're really good. But there is a level, a point at which when I have to discipline them or ask them to do something or suggest something, I can just see it in their eyes. There's just a level of, who's this guy again? You can see it. And it's like almost within them, like, where's my mom? Where's my dad? There's something, there's a level at which it gets to that they don't love me and trust me in the same way. Do you know why? I'm their uncle, I'm not their father. I'm their uncle, I'm not their father. And we don't have that basis of relationship, that depth that can change the exchange and the experience that we have between each other. And that's why when we pray, when we approach God, he starts with our Father. And therein lies the power, therein lies the explosive power of the Christian life. If you don't get this foundational concept, if you don't understand this framework within which we are to relate to God as children to a father, you will never worship him. You'll never love God. You'll never fully appreciate him. You'll never obey him. You'll never do his will. There'll always be something missing until you get deep in your heart the fundamental truth that you are the beloved children of God and that he is your father. You can pray the Lord's Prayer as much as you want, as often as you want. But you will miss God. Why? Because you've forgotten, you've drifted from, or you've never known him as your father. You remember where we started this morning? Where did we start? Jesus showing us that there's two ways to approach God. You can approach him as a religious person, based on your performance and a sense of obligation and duty. In exchange, do X, I'll do Y. Or you can approach him on the basis that he loves you and he's your father. And there's a dynamic there that's explosive to the power of your experience of God. Tim Keller is very good on helping us understand the different ways which we approach God. And I'm going to borrow one of his illustrations. He says that there's two ways to live in someone's house. There's two ways you can live in someone's house. Now, I know there's degrees, so just bear with me. But there's two ways in which you can live in someone's house. You can either be a tenant. You're living in someone's house as a tenant. The owner is the landlord, and you're the tenant. And you have a relationship that's based on a contract that has obligations. You're the tenant. What do? You pay rent. You respect the property. You keep the rules of the complex. The landlord has to maintain the property. There's a way that you're relating. You're living in their house, but it's a business relationship. It's a relationship that's based on performance. It's a relationship that's based on an exchange of goods and services. It's strictly a matter of performance. And the relationship is maintained, and the depth and the friendship and the joy of that relationship is dependent upon what you do. Did you pay the rent? As soon as you don't pay the rent, it changes. Did you respect the house? That's one way you can live in someone's house. But there's another way we can live in someone's house. You can live in the house as a family. You can live in someone's house as a son or a daughter. You can live in the family home of your parents. Now you see, in that dynamic, there's still rules, there's still obligations. You still respect the property. There's still things to be done, but there's an absolutely different reason as to why you do all those things. It's based on your relationship, not on your performance. It's based on your status. Your status as a son or a daughter. You live in this house on the basis of your status, that you are my beloved children. And that motivates you to respect and to honor and keep the obligations. But you're living there on a completely different basis. And Jesus is saying to us, and I'm repeating it again, that you can approach God in two ways when it comes to Him and when it comes to prayer. You can pray like a religious person who sounds like a pagan, coming to God on the basis of your performance, on the basis of your obligation. Or you can come to God on the basis of your status as a child. An approach to God that is based on not what you do, an approach to God that is based not on who you are, but a status that is given to you. You're my child. And that is how we should pray. That is where we start. That is the key to the Christian life, in the experience of the depth of love that God has for you. Do you know your status? Is it beloved, child of God? How do you know? How do you know that you're a child of God? How do you know on what basis currently do you approach God? How do you know how you're engaging God? Right now, how do you know where you are? And I know there are degrees to this engagement with God. But Jesus himself in this passage gives us two. He gives us the two extremes. He gives us a framework. He says, there's a Christian way and there's a religious pagan way. And we will probably find ourselves somewhere today on that spectrum. How do you know where you are? You see, a Christian can begin to pray like a pagan. You can drift because you forget who is your father and you begin to approach him as your landlord. So you might be drifting this morning. You might be on that swing. You might be somewhere in between. You see, here's the news though. A pagan, a non-Christian, can never pray like a Christian. Never. Why? They don't know him as their father. They're not part of the family. How do you know whether you're a child of God? How do you know on what basis you are approaching God this morning? Now, there are a few ways I think you can do this, but I think deep within your heart there's a sense of how you're feeling about God gives a clue to how you're thinking about God. So I'm just going to give us one way to help us, because I really want us to worship God and love God and engage with God as our Father. So how do you know? How do you respond? How do you respond to unanswered prayer? How do you respond to unanswered prayer? See, if you approach God on a business relationship, if you approach God as a tenant that's based on your performance, generally speaking, over time, you're going to get angrier and colder towards God. You're going to have this deep sense of being hard done by. God doesn't do the things that I want. He doesn't do them in the way that I want. He hasn't done them in the time frame that I want. And on it goes. Why do you feel like it? Because there's a sense I deserve this. There's an obligation. I've paid the rent. Now you haven't come through. I've upheld my end of the bargain. I've prayed. I've even gone to church. I'm paying the rent. I'm not destroying the property. Now you need to deliver. How do you know? How do you answer unanswered prayers? You constantly will feel put out. You will constantly feel hard done by. there will be a slow drifting away from God. The warmth and the love will slowly dissipate. Why? Because there's no basis of relationship of father to a child. You can't trust him. You can't trust him because you don't know him as your father, or you've forgotten that he's your father. Even when he says no, you see, when he says no, if there's no basis of relationship, there's no basis for trust. Does he really care for me? Is he looking out for my good? What's the result? How you respond? In time, you drift away. And there'll be this deep-seated anger, disappointment, disillusionment that God has passed me by. Or another way you can respond to unanswered prayers, how do you know? There's anxiety. There's maybe some guilt. There's maybe shame. See, God didn't answer my prayer because I didn't pay the rent. I didn't pray. I didn't pray enough. I wasn't good enough. I didn't do the things that I should have done. And you start feeling guilty and full of anxiety. It's like, what do I do now? It could have happened, but it didn't happen. But I didn't pray. I forgot to pay the rent. And now I haven't kept to my end of the bargain. It's the same thing. You're relating to God as a tenant based on your performance. So how do you know this morning where you are on the pendulum? How do you know how you're relating to God? How do you respond? How do you respond to unanswered prayer? Is it based on a business relationship, or is it based on a family relationship? Is it based on your performance and obligation, or is it based on your status and your position? And that's how you know. We ought to be relating to God as our Father. So what are we to do? How are we to do this? How are we to respond? How do we get back, whether you've drifted, whether you're here, whether you've just never thought about this, whether it speaks to the depth of your heart of how you're feeling about God right now? That'll tell you. So in one sense, what do? We do nothing. In another sense, some of us might need to be reminded again. You see, our problem in the Christian journey is we forget so quickly. And this morning, you might just need to be reminded again of the fatherhood of God, the depth of his love for you as a father. For some of us, it might be the first time. We've never heard this. You've just walked in here. You've been dragged here by a friend or a family member. And it's like, wow, is this the essence and the framework of Christian family? Is that he's a father to a child? So the work that we need to be doing maybe as we move forward this morning is one of receiving, that we need to receive this truth. We need to receive the reality that God loves us as children. We need to believe, take that in, so that we can experience the love of the Father. And that's what it means to be adopted. And in essence, what Jesus is speaking about here this morning, when he teaches us how to pray, is about adoption. Our Father. You see, this teaching on prayer is rooted far, far deeper than just prayer. If you look at it, you think it's just prayer. Jesus is not on about prayer here. It's far, far deeper. He's about understanding the fatherhood of God. It's about understanding the fundamental, life-changing, life-transforming, explosive truth of your status as adopted sons and daughters of God. It's about the very essence of being a Christian. That's what Jesus is getting to here when he teaches us how to pray. He wants us to know him. He wants us to be in relationship with him. And he says the essence and the basis of the way we relate to each other is fathers to children. And I have adopted you into my family. And now you are mine. And on that basis, in that relationship, in that love, so we respond to him. And we can say, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come. Anything you ask of me, your will be done. Only on that basis. The degree to which you understand the depth of the Father's love in adopting you as his own children will be the degree to which you pray and experience and enjoy God the Father. John chapter 1 verse 12 says, to all who received him, there's the receiving. To all who believed him, there's the believing. He gives the right to become what? Children of God. And that's what he said. So what does it mean to be a Christian? That's what he's getting to here. The Lord's Prayer is saying, what does it mean to be a Christian? It means that through Jesus, you are adopted into the family of God, and you now have access to all the rights and all the privileges of his sons and daughters. The writer to the Hebrews in chapter 3, what does he say? You can now approach the throne of grace with confidence and receive mercy and grace in your time of need. That's what it means. You've been adopted into the family of God, and you have access, the same position as Jesus, to the Father, to receive all the privileges, the grace and the love and the beauty of who God is. So what are we to do? How do we get back? You need to dig deeply and receive deeply the wonderful doctrine of the truth of adoption. That's what Jesus is getting to when he says, this then is how you pray. See, adoption is a picture of salvation. It's reminding us of the essence of the relationship. It's reminding us of the essence of what it means to be a Christian. See, when you adopt a child, it's not the result of what the child does. I know there's families in our church that all have adopted, and they'll know this. The child's adoption is not based on their effort or performance. In most cases, the child isn't even aware that there's an adoption process happening, or isn't even looking for it. Adoption is the gracious, merciful, loving choice of a father that says, you are mine. I want you. And he takes you to be his. It's this wonderful picture that this morning, if you know him as your father, it's that the God of all creation has extended his grace and mercy to you and loved you as his own, and he's chosen you. Adoption is a picture of salvation. It's not on performance, but a gracious, loving choice of a father. Secondly, adoption also, something happens in adoption. When you adopt a child, they don't change their behavior immediately. They may have certain characteristics or things that they do, and that takes time as you love them and instruct them that they change. But there's something magical that happens in adoption, and it's instantaneous. It's instantaneous. It's that the status of the child changes immediately. You get an unabridged birth certificate, it's in your name. You go to Home Affairs, you won't find their old name. It's removed from the database. There's an instantaneous status change. A legal transaction takes place that you are no longer this, you are mine. You take my name, you are my child. It's that verse that the old is gone, the new has come. No matter what happened to you, no matter how much you abandoned, no matter what you have done, it matters no more. Right now, from this point, your status is my child. You cannot find their name on the database. It goes back to your date of birth. From the very beginning, you are now made a child of God. Adoption is wonderful. It's wonderful. You have that document in your hand. It says, you are mine. You are mine. Adoption is a picture of salvation. It's the very essence of what it means to be a Christian. Loved, chosen, and changed. The old is gone. The new has come. This is the depth of the Father's love for you. This is what ignites relationship and prayer and joy and satisfaction in God. It's the deepening awakening to your adoption. Thirdly, adoption can never be taken away. Think about this. You were not chosen on the basis of your performance. You weren't chosen on the basis of who you were. Therefore, you cannot lose it on the basis of your performance. It's not the basis of the relationship. It's rooted in the Father's love. That's the basis of the relationship. It's rooted in the Father's grace. He chooses you outside of your performance. Therefore, you cannot lose the Father's love. What does Romans 8 tell us? What can separate you from the love of the Father? And he lists it. The conclusion is nothing. Nothing. You see, the child is no longer in foster care. The child is no longer sent back at the end of the weekend. The child is no longer sent away if it behaves badly. Why? Because the child is part of the family, irrespective of the way it behaves. It's family. You might have the most dysfunctional family, but you still have relationship. Why? It's family. The wonder and the beauty of adoption is incredible. It's based on your status, and it can never be taken away. The love of the Father is lavished upon you. What kind of love is this? That He would choose us, that He would make us His own, and that we can never lose it. Now, I know some of you might be saying, well, it does matter the way you behave. It does. But, when you realize the security and the assurance and the love that God has for you, and the transformative power that He's done in you with a new heart and a new spirit, what is your response? You're not thinking, how can I mess this up? You're thinking, what kind of love is this? And it moves you and empowers you to obedience and worship. It's when you understand. What are you like when you know how much you love? Your immediate response isn't, how can I screw this up? Your immediate response is, wow, this is unbelievable. So in one sense it does matter, in another sense it doesn't matter the way you behave. But it can't be taken away, the love of the Father. You see, in adoption, the Father says this, I promise, I legally bound myself to regard you with all the commitment, love, and acceptance that I would give my natural children. You are now mine. And that means, this is what it means. God the Father loves you in exactly the same way that He loves Jesus. God the Father loves you in exactly the same way that He loves Jesus. Jesus even tells us this in His own prayer in John 17:23. Jesus is praying to His Father and He says, Father, He says, you, that's God the Father, have loved them, that's the children, the adopted children. And then He says this, even as you have loved me. Most powerful words in the Bible, even as, in the same way. Jesus is saying, Jesus Himself is like, you have loved them the same way you've loved me. Just pause for a moment. You're adopted. You're a child of God the Father. You're loved and accepted. Even as, in the same way that God loves Jesus. Now we can pray. Now we can worship. Think about how much God the Father loves Jesus. Think of the eternal love of God the Father in the eternal Trinity. Think of the depth of God's love for His Son when He became flesh. Think of the wonderful words that God the Father speaks over His Son, Jesus, at His baptism. What does He say? That is my Son. In Him I am well pleased. I delight in Him for the whole world to see. Jesus is saying, God the Father of all creation is saying, that's Him. He's mine. I love Him. I don't just love Him. I delight in Him. And now He's saying is, in the same way, even as you're mine. And He says, I delight in you. I choose you. You are mine. So Jesus is saying, Father, you've loved them, your adopted sons and daughters, even as you've loved me in the same way. So when you become a Christian, the very essence of what He's getting to, He's saying this, I promise, I've legally bound myself to you to regard you with the same commitment, love, and acceptance that I have for my own Son, Jesus. By legal declaration, you have crossed over from being nobody to being somebody. You've crossed over from being no one's child to being my child. And that's the basis on which we approach God. That fuels the experience and the joy and the power. When you realize this, what are you going to do? It's this powerful, transforming truth of adoption that when it breaks into our hearts and shatters us, our response is hallowed be your name. Hallowed be your name. The truth explodes into worship. This is what happens. The outworking of adoption is worship. The outworking of the understanding, the comprehending, the grasping of the depth of the Father's love and adoption is hallowed be your name. True worship begins with adoption. All prayer, all praise, all thanksgiving, all of our relating to God begins with us coming to Him as His beloved children. And that's what Jesus has won for us. That's what Jesus has purchased for you. That's what we speak about when you go to the cross. Jesus has gone to the cross and He wins for you and He purchases you and He pays the immeasurable price of your adoption so that you might become a son and daughter and live with Him. Direct access into the very throne room of God Himself to receive grace and mercy in your time of need. That's what happens in the cross. 1 John chapter 3, 1, what Pete read for us at the beginning. See, you see, what is he saying? See, look, look again this morning, look again, and don't stop looking. If I have one advice to you of the Christian journey, take this verse, and it says, see, what kind of love is this? What he's saying is, don't stop looking. Don't stop looking. Look again, and again, and again. What kind of love is this that the Father has lavished or given to us, the NIV, lavished, that we might be called the what? The children of God. And then he reaffirms it. Because we struggle to believe that is what you are. See, look again, keep on looking until it hits the bottom of your heart and explodes. What kind of love? The Greek word of what kind of love is from what country? What he's saying is from what country? What is this? From what nation? From what world? From what universe? He's saying is this love is unfathomable. Where does it come from? It's incomprehensible. There's nothing in the human creation that can compare to this love. What country is this from? Where the heck does this love come from? I cannot understand it. It's from another world. That's what he's saying is, see, this love is unfathomable. You cannot grasp it. You cannot have enough of it, but you should look at it. You should receive it, and you should believe it. Is there anything like this? What kind of love is this that the Father lavishes upon? He lavishes upon you. And that is what you are, the child of God. We shouldn't miss the massive depth of what he's saying. In real terms, Jesus is saying this, that you have a Father in heaven who's the perfect Father that you need. He's not an earthly Father. He's the perfect Father that you need. He's not too busy for you. He's not absent. He's not disinterested. He's your dad. And he's there. He says, our Father in heaven is everywhere, all powerful. Ours is personal. He's yours. He's intimate. So when you talk to him, you can know that he hears. What he's saying is when you pray to him and you ask of him, you can know that he listens. And he always knows what's best for you. He's always doing the right thing. He provides for your needs. And he shapes us and he disciplines us like any good father would. And you know what? It makes him happy to do that. He delights in it. He delights in it. He delights when you pray. He delights to do these things for you. It overwhelms. This is my child in whom I delight. You see, no one forced God to begrudgingly take you. No one twisted his arm. There's nothing that you did to earn it. No, any performance, anything you've done to make him want you. God chooses you out of his own heart of love. We are his. We are adopted by him, not because we were born into a fancy family or a certain bloodline or a certain race or a certain country or because we did certain things and said things. No, we are his because he says before the foundation of the world, God in his love chose you through his son Jesus to be his own. He didn't begrudgingly come to you. He lavishes his love upon you and he calls you and he delights in engaging with you in prayer so that you might experience the fullness of who God is. How does he do that? He gives us his son on the cross. He takes our place, pays our debt, and purchases our adoption. You see, our sin, we've got to grasp, part of this grasping is our sin, we rejected the Father. Deserves nothing but death and hell. But Jesus takes our death and the full wrath of hell upon himself in the cross. He conquers it all so that we don't get what we deserve, but we get grace upon grace. We get lavish love upon love. Jesus get what we deserve, so we get what Jesus deserved. Sonship and adoption. And worship then, hallowing of the Father, is just responding to the beauty of this truth. Who he is, what he has done, that we might be called the children of God.